Could it be that the current vaccines deployed in the midst of a pandemic will turn out to be an enormous mistake? My next guest thinks so, and he's an expert on vaccines and their development. I had a chance to record a long interview with Dr. Geert Vandenbosch. I have to admit, his controversial take on vaccines had preceded him, and so I did what I always do, and I looked into both his ideas and his background. What I found both surprised and worried me. As you know, the vaccines are being steamrolled out. The social, corporate, and governmental pressure to take them is immense. Despite that, and this is an anecdote, so take it for what it's worth, the people I personally know who have not taken the vaccine are heavily overrepresented by medical and scientific personnel and doctors. Hey, maybe I just know a strange cross-section, which is quite possible. Or maybe this tells us something. I'm going to cut back and forth through this very long interview with Dr. Vandenbosch to present the basics of his argument so you can at least hear what he has to say. The entire interview can be found at my website, peakprosperity.com. The point, as always, is that we should be having these sorts of conversations and moments of questioning. Always. That's the scientific method. It's how we learn. It's how we adjust and grow. And by doing this, we become more resilient. Now, perhaps you don't know who Dr. Geert Vandenbosch is either. I didn't. So let me introduce him. Dr. Bosch is perhaps the most qualified person in the world to discuss these matters. He holds both a Doctor of Veterinary Medicine degree as well as a PhD, and he did his postdoctoral work in virology at Cornell University, my alma mater. He's board certified in veterinary virology, was the senior research scientist and head of environmental virology at University of Hohenheim in Stuttgart, Germany from 1990 to 1994. He's been an adjunct professor of environmental virology and zoonotic diseases at the University of Hohenheim in Stuttgart in Germany from 1997 to 2000. He was a program manager at the Global Health Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, or Gavi, from 2015 to 2016. He was the chief innovation and science officer at UNIVAC, where new vaccine technologies were invented, focusing on using natural killer cells to unlock new immunological pathways for host protection. Are we done yet? Not even close. In 2017, he was head of the Vaccine Development Office of the German Center for Infection Research, known as the DZIF. He was managing director of Vireco, advising on all aspects of vaccine development, patenting, performing due diligence on everything from adjuvant to new antigen discoveries. He was head of adjuvant technologies and alternative deliveries for GlaxoSmithKline, and even was the senior program officer for global health and vaccine discovery for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation for 3 years. All right, but how does he feel about vaccines? I mean, is it possible that a man who's dedicated his entire professional career to vaccines is secretly anti-vax?
As everybody knows very well, I'm passionate about vaccines. I'm not, this is my passion.
Okay, with that settled, I guess he's not anti-vax. The first point we're going to discuss today here is his main thesis, that one should not vaccinate with a leaky vaccine, technically non-sterilizing, meaning it doesn't completely prevent the virus from replicating within a body. So let's turn now to his main argument.
Well, the problem is that when you vaccinate in the midst of a pandemic and you do mass vaccination, and that is the thing that is for many people difficult to understand. On one hand side, you are, of course, diminishing viral transmission, because you're mounting antibodies and those antibodies are able to neutralize the virus. But at the same time, what we are doing is we are putting the virus under tremendous immune selection pressure.
Tremendous immune selection pressure. Let's unpack that, because this is a potentially explosively important point to make. Because one cannot vaccinate everyone all at once. It means there's a wide mix of people out there in the population, right? We've got old people who are vulnerable, young people who aren't, people who have natural immunity, either due to a prior infection with SARS-CoV-2 or a related coronavirus perhaps, and people who are capable of being infected. All while this virus is still actively running about the landscape, infecting who it will. What this does is it creates a near-perfect environment for the virus to encounter vaccinated people who were only recently given the jab, meaning their antibody titers are low and weak, or even fully vaccinated people within whom the virus can still manage to grow and reproduce, and most importantly, evolve. The reason is that this is not a sterilizing vaccine, such as the attenuated whole live virus vaccines, which present the entire virus to your entire immune system, but a very narrow, tiny focus on the spike protein only. Now, because of that, only a tiny fraction of the immune system is brought to life to fight that protein intruder, not the entire virus, which brings us to the second main point.
Now, if you vaccinate, like, you know, with these global mass vaccination campaigns, you're vaccinating millions and millions of people, they will mount antibodies. While they are mounting antibodies, they are already exposed to the virus. So there is plenty of opportunity for the virus to escape from the immune response that is generated. And that is what is an unprecedented situation.
So let's talk about this unprecedented situation he just talked about here. It's really important. Now, let me decode that a bit. What he's saying here is that it's the combination of these particular vaccines and their very narrow focus on just the spike protein. And that's the original spike protein from Wuhan way back in January 2020. At that, it's evolved quite a bit since. Coupled to the mixing vat nature of hundreds of millions of semi and fully vaccinated people continually being exposed and re-exposed to pandemic virus, which is circulating all about, and that this combines to create an excellent environment for the virus to puzzle out how to go about evading the immune system. So let's talk about that now for a bit so that we're all on the same page about the implications here, because this is important. So let me go to my slides. We'll start here. So his second point, I just want to be clear on this, that it's the nature of this being a non-sterilizing vaccine that creates this puzzle room, right? And the way I think about that, it's like those puzzle rooms where you can get to practice your E&E or escape and evasion. And it's that these vaccines are actually going to be helping to create new variants faster than if these particular vaccines weren't used. So let's talk about this for a bit. What does this immune escape mean? What is this puzzle room we're escaping from? All right, here we have a little picture of a coronavirus and those Ys that are coming at it are antibodies. And those Ys, in the case of the vaccines, are directed against those little bumps on the top. Those are the spikes. And so these vaccines, because they only have the spike component, they don't have the rest of that virus. By the way, the rest of that ball you would see down there has all sorts of other things on its surface that your antibodies could also detect, but as well, the rest of your immune system can see that and begin to react to it. So immune escape means that we put a vaccine into a person, that vaccine is directed against just the spike protein, and then the virus figures out how to reconfigure its spike so that those vaccine-generated antibodies don't recognize the spike anymore. So let's bring this point up because the immune system is super complicated. This is your whole immune system in a very tiny schematic. It's way more complicated than this. But let me get my drawing tool out here as well, because what we're talking about is that to escape the immune system, what the virus needs to do is to find some way to maybe defeat, let me see if I got the drawing tool. Maybe it defeats this portion right here. Maybe it's figuring out how to escape this portion over here. Here are the antibodies down here. Maybe it's figuring out how to get around those. The virus can escape in lots and lots of different ways by finding ways to fool the immune system, which is finding ways to hide from the immune system. Now, is the virus doing this consciously and trying to escape? No, it's playing the law of really large numbers. Millions, hundreds of millions of vaccinated people, trillions of viral particles in a person, potentially, or whatever the numbers are, huge, huge numbers. And eventually, one of these viruses is going to make a mistake. And that mistake is going to be very beneficial to its overall ability to either replicate inside the cell, transmit between humans, or possibly also have different medical implications, maybe being more lethal, something like that. At any rate, the virus is evolving, and Geert's main point is that the way we've gone about vaccinating in this pandemic using these vaccines and also the way we administered the vaccines, sort of piecemeal, did as fast as we could, but you really need to hit everybody all at once as much as possible. But it's the nature of this being a non-sterilizing vaccine, meaning people who have the vaccine are still able to be infected by this virus, and that virus is still able to replicate inside them, especially, and this is a timing issue, people who have had their first vaccine, their antibodies are slowly ramping up in this little window in here, is a perfect environment when the antibodies are low for the virus to begin figuring out the puzzle room. That's like the perfect moment. They get like clues in the puzzle room. So because of that, in the law of large numbers, that's what we're seeing in this particular story, is that this virus is beginning to escape. By the way, is this an unknown thing? Is this a subject only to SARS-CoV-2? No. That's why you bring in virology experts, because this is a very common thing. Viruses are always looking to escape. So here's just a table of some mechanisms of immune evasion by viruses. All, you know, they do antigenic variation, which is what we were just talking about with the spike protein shifting. Who does that? Well, the influenza, rhinovirus, HIV. It could be that they engage in inhibition of antigen processing. So who does that? Herpes simplex, the HSVs, cytomegalovirus, or CMV. Could be the production of decoy, MHC, or major histocompatibility complex molecules that inhibit the natural killer cells. These are awesome. The natural killers are the ones that find a cell that's going, help, help, I got something inside me, and they kill the cell, which stops the viral replicating. That's, you really want those turned on. CMV does that. Or it could be production of cytokine receptor homologs, on and on. There's this, listen, it's cat and mouse. There's escape and evasion is just part of this whole process. And it's something we should have expected from this virus, just as we would expect it from any other virus. It's just, it's part of the game. So really, because of the way we're going about doing this vaccination program, we've really just created a puzzle room for this virus. And this is Geert's main point. He says, because of this, we're going to create more variants. We're not going to stop this thing. We're not going to get to this crazy thing called herd immunity. And again, it's because this puzzle room is wickedly complex. There's lots of, it's very hard to escape it. But once you figure out how to escape it, it's really powerful for that particular virus. And so again, it's the law of large numbers that really applies here. Because we have so many people being vaccinated, we're running the chance that we're going to get more of these escapees happening. And by the way, we're already seeing that in the news. You can look, I just read a Boston.com article that said 4,000 people who are fully vaccinated in Massachusetts have just tested positive for SARS-CoV-2. So again, they're not all that sick. The vaccines are working as intended. But Geert's point is, what's happening is that we're running lots and lots of experiments in these fully vaccinated people, in this case, where the virus is learning, evolving, figuring out how to get out of that. So this brings us to our next point, which is really, really important. Let's talk now about herd immunity. I mean, that's the whole point of the whole vaccination push, right? We want to get to herd immunity. At least that's what we've been told over and over again. And most recently, CNBC gave the, to me, thoroughly discredited Anthony Fauci another chance to prove his scientific illiteracy without question. So let's go to this slide really quickly here and look at this. Dr. Fauci, this is just on June 17th, said, how we'll know when we've reached herd immunity with COVID. Here this article reads, since the start of the pandemic, many people have anticipated herd immunity against COVID as an elusive finish line. Of course it is. The catch is, no one even knows for certain what the threshold of herd immunity for COVID-19 is. Dr. Fauci, White House Chief Medical Advisor, told YouTube's, you know how I feel about that, Dr. Mike Varshavsky, during an interview published June 6th. So how will we know if and when we're there, meaning there at herd immunity? He said, quote, from Fauci, quote, when you get that level of protection that turns out to be the threshold of herd immunity, you'll know it, because you'll see the infections almost disappear. Well, this is an assertion. This is an assertion without evidence. So this is something that I asked Dr. Vandenbosch, if these vaccines here could lead to this herd immunity thing. And here's what he said.
And hence, when you talk about herd immunity, well, what is herd immunity? In fact, herd immunity means that by immunizing a large amount of people in a population, you will automatically protect people who are not immunized, because you will have an impact on the transmission of the virus and you will diminish the viral load. And by doing that, you protect people who are not immunized. But here we are basically promoting the propagation of variants, and those will be shed, of course, by the vaccinees. So basically, vaccinees are now a source of infection for people who are not vaccinated. And that is, in fact, exactly the opposite of what herd immunity is supposed to be.
Whoops. Instead of being a firebreak in the herd immunity line of defenses, Dr. Van den Bosch is suggesting that it's possible that the vaccinated, or vaccinees, as he calls them, will become the source of infection of new and possibly more aggressive variants. So who's right here, Fauci or Bosch? The truth is, we don't know. But I can tell you this, Fauci's assertions are not based on science. He has literally no science to back him up. He's just saying stuff. Instead, Fauci ought to be honest that this is all a rather large experiment that we hope works out in the favor of public health. Oh well, at least pharma profits are assured, and that has always been Dr. Fauci's number one concern throughout his entire career, and especially during this pandemic. And here's why. This is Dr. Van den Bosch's major point, is that when you get exposed to the wild-type virus, the full virus, when you have natural immunity, he's making the point that natural immunity is actually much more powerful than just the vaccinated immunity. That's confused, right? In the public discourse, they always pretend like, well, whether you were vaccinated or you got the wild-type immunity, in fact, the vaccinated immunity is better. We know that because they're even making fully immune people who had the wild-type virus who already have an immune response, they're saying they should get the vaccine too, like the vaccine's better, right? Or that they're equivalent, at least certainly people who are vaccinated are protected. Dr. Van den Bosch's point, after decades in studying viruses and virology and vaccines in particular, he said, nah, it's not really the case because, in fact, when we get antibodies, we just have this one slice over here of what's called adaptive immunity, or the humoral response, or the B-cell immunity, or antibodies. So that's just one tiny slice, but in fact, if you want to be fully protected, you really want these T-cells all activated. You absolutely want these natural killer T-cells activated, because they will bring in this entire alignment here of other things, basophils, mast cells, dendritic cells. It's very complicated, but the point here is that when you just give that tiny piece, just the spike protein, you leave out all this other awesome stuff over here that we see just right down there. Is he right? Is he wrong? Good question. In fact, you can find lots and lots of research papers that are exploring this very thing. There's a lot of people besides Dr. Van den Bosch who are very concerned about this at Harvard, at Johns Hopkins. There's papers coming out all over the place about this exact dynamic that's going on right here. So that's something that we really have to look into, and that we really want to be sure that we understand, because if he's right, the vaccination program that we're undertaking right now will actually be more harmful than helpful. Let's absolutely hope that's not the case, but we should be having that conversation, and we should be having a robust debate about that. Okay, so now we get to point number four, which is really this, which is that the vaccinated are going to be the main source of variant risk to everyone. You've been hearing a lot about the Delta variant lately, I assume. And that's to the vaccinated and the unvaccinated alike. So let's now that we have all this background, we can turn to a longer clip where he really gets his whole point out all at once. I just want you to hear it from him directly rather than my translation. So let's turn to that now.
It's critical to realize that mutations and variants, if you like, appear all the time. This virus can have a large number of mutations. And when it replicates, automatically you will have a number of these variations. And not only in the spike protein, but of course also in other viral proteins. What is important to realize is that if now the virus is confronted with a host that is making his life difficult in a sense that it is mounting, for example, antibodies or an immune response, then under certain circumstances, these were basically the circumstances that I was previously mentioning, you can start to naturally select some of these naturally occurring mutations. The kind of immune response that we are mounting naturally is very, very, very different from the immune response that is induced by the vaccine.
All right, let me hold on that for just a second, because that's a really critical point here, which is that our natural immune response is much more robust, very different from just the antibody-directed response, which we've talked about before. And he's saying as well that because of this laboratory that we're creating out there in every single body, it just gives opportunities for the virus to practice escaping the immune system. So this is not something that would be an unexpected consequence. This is actually what we would expect the virus to do. That's how, as I mentioned in that table, this is what viruses do. They practice escape and evasion. That's their whole reason to be. So that's why in vaccine development, you want to be very, very careful that you're not accidentally creating that environment for the virus to actually get better at what it does. You want to use a vaccine that's going to help make that harder, not easier, or in some ways improving the process for it. So a really critical point right there. Let's keep going.
The common denominator is, of course, that both induce antibodies against spike protein, but the natural infection does many more things and is much richer. And also, during natural infection, you have to imagine when you get a natural infection, then you have, for example, you start mounting antibodies. But during that time, and this has to do with innate immune mechanism, the host cannot be reinfected. So what I'm saying with this is when you are mounting antibodies as a consequence of natural infection, these antibodies take time to mount. And during that time, the immune response is not optimal. So this would be an easy task for the virus to escape the immune response because the antibodies are not optimal. But there is a kind of like natural innate immune mechanism that prevents the host from being reinfected, or that prevents a host cell from being reinfected immediately after the first infection. So during the time where there is suboptimal immunity because antibodies are still in the process of being mounted.
All right, very important point. Let me unpack that again. With just the vaccine approach, with just the spike protein, what happens is you give that injection and then a second injection, and during that time, antibodies are beginning to rise. But again, this is just this narrow slice. It doesn't include the innate immunity system over here. This is just the humoral immune system. So while that's happening, you have this imperfect protection, which means that while somebody's mounting that immune response through antibodies alone, they can be infected and reinfected. In fact, we've seen this already. That's in the data. That's what he's talking about. And he's comparing that to what happens when you get exposed to the wild type virus, and then you have both the humoral or the antibody response as well as the innate immune system, which includes those really wonderful T cells, natural killer cells, mast cells, dendritic cells, all of that, because those can actually go out and seek and destroy the cells that are the factories for these viruses, helping to block that whole thing right away. And he made that second really important point, which is generally speaking, what we see when somebody has a weak antibody response, but they're also involving their complete innate immune system, that they don't get reinfected during that period. And that is what causes sterilizing to actually happen, because the virus can't come back in and reinfect and practice this escape and evasion. So big difference between the immunity you get from a shot and the immunity that you get from a natural infection. So let's keep going.
That is a very different situation from when you vaccinate somebody. When you vaccinate somebody, okay, you also start from zero, so to say. These people are going to mount antibodies. But during that time, they can now very well be infected during the time where their antibodies are suboptimal, because this is not a natural infection. This is just mounting antibodies against spike protein. And what is the likelihood that during this phase where the vaccinee is mounting these antibodies, he or she is going to be infected
Well, that likelihood is very high because we are in the midst of a pandemic. Mass vaccination, a generalized immune pressure that you put on the virus by vaccinating so many people. And while people are mounting antibodies, or after they have gotten their first shot of a two-shot vaccine, which is suboptimal immunity, we know that. You need both shots. I mean, that has become very, very clear over the last few weeks and months. So as long as you didn't get your second shot of your two-shot vaccine, you are still in a situation where you have suboptimal immunity, but that will not prevent the virus from infecting you. So there is plenty of opportunity during mass vaccination for the virus to infect the host while the host is still having suboptimal antibodies. And that makes it, of course, for the virus so easy to escape to this immune response and to get a competitive advantage, which will basically result in dominance of the variant that had the capability to circumvent that immune response.
All right, so there's a number of things going on here. And if he's right, and again, this is a hypothesis, it's a thought position. He's got a paper out now about this. And I'm hoping that scientists really begin to burrow into this, because this is what we need to know. And so if he's right, it means that the virus is going to continually be mounting its escape and evasion activities. And the longer it does that, the more we're going to have to vaccinate and revaccinate and get people on these vaccination schedules, which may or may not have other impacts, which are not favorable. We're learning more and more about these vaccines all the time and the ways in which maybe it's by nature of their construct. Maybe it's by nature of the fact that the spike protein itself has some sort of influence on the body's chemistry and homeostasis. Maybe it's because they're just causing some sort of an immune response. We don't know yet. It's complicated, but we're learning that there are impacts to getting these vaccines for a significant number of people. Not everybody, but enough that we should be concerned about it. Okay, so now we can actually, I think, turn to his primary conclusion and understand this, and because this is, I think, very well said. So we have all the context to really understand this statement. This is what we should be debating. Given the huge amount of immune escape that will be provoked by mass vaccination campaigns and flanking containment measures, so, you know, lockdowns, masks, all that, it's difficult to imagine how human interventions would not cause COVID-19 pandemic to turn into an incredible disaster for global and individual health. That's the hypothesis. That's what we really ought to be talking about, which means there really, really needs to be a rock solid debate and inquiry into this subject. Hey, it might be right, it might be wrong, but it certainly needs to be investigated and better understood, and it absolutely shouldn't be squelched, censored, blocked, shadow banned. But those are the things that you and I both know are probably on the table for this, because, hey, we can't have anybody questioning these things because we need to do it just one way. That's the story we have for you right now. And, hey, listen, remember, folks, it doesn't have to be this way. We all have a part to play in reclaiming the future and empowering resilience. So here's how you can help us. If you like this video, give us a like. Leave us a comment below and tell us what you thought. And most importantly, subscribe to our YouTube channel. And in case we ever get kicked off of YouTube, which is always a very real possibility, you can subscribe to our site at peakprosperity.com, or better yet, become a full member and get access to all the best content I create, live webinars with me twice a month, and a lot more. It's great. Trust me, you'll love it. And most importantly, please share this video with 5 people. That's my ask of you today. Those 5 people who need to hear this information. The only way we win this battle is by making as many people as possible aware of the true nature of the issues we're all facing. So that's it for now. Hey, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.